Hi everyone, it's been a while. It's been a long time since I've recorded. So you are listening to the Complex Trauma Recovery Podcast. I was just on a bit of a hiatus. I'm happy to announce that I graduated from my graduate program with my master's in social work. I'm taking the licensing exam for my LMSW tomorrow, July 8th. And I also moved across states. So I'm now settled in my new house in Texas. And it was a very hectic but exciting few months. And I'm really happy to be able to start making episodes again. So I'm going to be releasing one free episode every month on all of these platforms. And then if you would like access to the second episode I'm going to be making every month, that is going to be posted on my Patreon. And you can find the link on all of my social media. So thank you guys so much for your support, for being patient with me over these last few months, and I'm really happy to be back. Wherever you're listening to the podcast, if you can like or subscribe, it really helps me out a lot. Thank you. So I'm going to start this episode by reading a question that I got, or at least part of it, and then kind of talking through it. So it says, I'm curious if you would ever do an episode on how to best be in a relationship with those impacted by CPTSD. I identify as having anxious attachment and have done a lot of work on healing and moving towards earned secure attachment. I realize a lot of my anxious attachment, which started in childhood, but further developed from being in relationships with people who have experienced significant complex trauma and have a very disorganized attachment system, which has been very activating to my propensity towards towards anxious attachment. As a social worker, empath, and person who identifies as having codependent patterns, I've had a pattern of attracting people who've experienced a lot of complex trauma, and I'm curious to learn more about the line between being compassionate towards people's trauma and mental health and maintaining healthy boundaries and standards for the way I want to be treated in relationships to preserve my own mental health. So I think this is a really great question and probably something that a lot of people can relate to, and I wanted to talk about it. So thank you to the person that sent me that question. So I think there's a few things that come to mind for me. The first is that I talk a lot about the process of earning secure attachment, which is moving from having an insecure attachment style, anxious, avoidant, disorganized, to having a secure attachment style. And I talk about how part of that process is we need reparative experiences. So we need relationships that are safe and that are healthy enough that we can learn how it feels to be safe and to be close with someone at the same time, right? These experiences are called disconfirming experiences because they disconfirm the prior evidence we have that led to an insecure attachment style. So if you have an avoidant, an anxious, a disorganized attachment style, what you also have is a big bucket of evidence, like probably years and years and years of evidence that led you to developing those defensive patterns and beliefs and instincts around closeness and around relationships. So when we find relationships that help us change those patterns, help us have new experiences of what it feels like to be connected to someone, that is what helps us learn security, and those are disconfirming experiences. So relationships are a vehicle for healing from relationship trauma, right? What's hurt in relationships is healed in relationships. Where it gets tricky, of course, is that relationships can also be re-traumatizing. We can also get into relationships that, like the person who wrote that comment said or wrote that message said, that reconfirm, you know, our insecure experiences with attachments and maybe even deepen our anxious or avoidant or disorganized attachment systems. So a really helpful phrase that you'll hear if you kind of read about attachment theory and polyvagal theory is the term safe enough, good enough, secure enough. This is something that Pete Walker talks about in his book that I found really helpful, because the reality is a relationship is always going to be between two human beings that have their issues, that have their baggage, and it's not going to be perfect. So when I say you need a relationship that's safe and that can help you have new disconfirming experiences, it doesn't mean you have to find someone that has no trauma and has a secure attachment style, right? Sometimes there's this idea that if you have an insecure attachment style, you have to find someone with a secure attachment style to kind of show you how to heal. And although people who are secure can definitely be really helpful partners for people who have insecure attachment styles, it's not the only way. So the idea of safe enough and good enough is about setting realistic expectations. And I think that's that balance you're talking about. Like, what is the balance between knowing that as human beings, we're going to be connecting with other human beings that have their own trauma and their own triggers, and learning how to, you know, connect with and heal together with people that are working through those kinds of attachment injuries, but also ensuring that you want to be in a relationship that is reparative and not re-traumatizing. And, you know, this doesn't just apply to romantic relationships. This applies to friendships too. I think a lot of us have had friendships with someone where we are like, I love you and I care about you, but even if I can have empathy for why you behave the way you do, even if I know that your behavior is coming from a place of trauma and pain, it still affects me, right? Your behavior is still your behavior. And maybe this just isn't something that is healthy for me. And most of us have been on both sides of that dynamic at some point in our lives, you know? So the idea of good enough is about finding what those standards are for you that will allow you to create security in the relationship, without expecting the relationship to be perfect and knowing how to connect in a meaningful way as two human beings with trauma you're working through, right? Those boundaries and that line is going to look different for everyone. You know, I can't put down on paper, like, this is what you should expect. You know, this is what the line is. But what I can say is that there's a really big difference between someone who has trauma and has attachment trauma, who is actively committed to working on learning from and growing through those things, and someone who's really stuck in their trauma and kind of reenacting their trauma or projecting it onto you without bringing a lot of consciousness into how to approach that and how to change those patterns, you know? So what I always say about attachment is that two people of any attachment style can work out and can heal together if they are both willing to do the work to notice when they're triggered, understand when they're responding from a place of defensiveness or past pain. And maybe if you don't notice it in the moment, it's about what you do afterwards, right? So I think it's normal that in most relationships, there's going to be a time when someone gets triggered and kind of, you know, lashes out, not like necessarily aggressively, but has a kind of outburst of emotion or kind of responds to something from like a habitual kind of triggered place, not really in the present moment and not really using awesome, effective interpersonal skills. That happens to everybody at some point, right? But it shouldn't be a super consistent pattern to the point where it's exhausting or you feel like it's just this endless repeating cycle. The goal of a healthy relationship, a reparative relationship, should be for both people to be able to break those patterns and experience healthier communication and connection. So I think the important thing is that you don't feel like you're the only one doing the heavy lifting and kind of holding space, right? If you are someone who's empathetic and who tends to get into relationships with people who have a lot of trauma and who have a lot of stuff going on, you might be someone that's putting yourself in the position to kind of be the caregiver in the relationship, where you're the one that is kind of managing things, trying to take the lead for all of the communication, trying to resolve conflict, trying to empathize. And maybe you're not getting that back, right? Like, are they empathizing with you? Are they understanding your attachment needs? Are they putting effort into changing their communication patterns? And I think that's really one of the main things that actually creates a sense of safety in relationships is just mutual effort, like knowing that both of you are really doing your part to try to challenge your own unhealthy communication patterns and to try to grow together. And, you know, really where that rests is self-awareness and effective communication and vulnerability. So there's going to be times where you're embarrassed or they're embarrassed because, you know, they got triggered or they overreacted. There's going to be times that one of you is struggling, that the communication is off. And I think what makes the biggest difference is often how you come back together. So when we talk about the three R's, which is regulate, relate, reason, or regulate, relate, and then repair, this is a really helpful tool. It was originally kind of created as a method for parents to learn how to regulate their children and create secure attachment with their children and co-regulate, but it's also really applicable to adult relationships, you know, friendships or romantic or otherwise. And with the three R's, regulate, relate, and reason, there's kind of an agreement that in order to effectively move through conflict and move through triggers and actually get something from it, right, benefit from it in some way, learn from it, there's kind of these three main steps. And the first step is regulate. And that means that both people recognize, well, not in the case of a parent and child, but in an adult relationship, both people recognize that you are not going to effectively communicate and work through something if you are super triggered and dysregulated. Because in that state, you are in survival mode. You don't have actually access to your higher cognitive capacities. So you're not going to be as able to understand and really hear the other person. You're really going to be more stuck in your feelings and in your triggers and in your, you know, injuries. And so it's an agreement to, when things are getting heated, when things are defensive, when things are, you know, feeling heavy or really dysregulated, that you're gonna step away from the conflict, step away from the conversation, and do some things to regulate yourselves and maybe to co-regulate, right? Depending on your style. So it's basically an agreement that's like, we're gonna put this on a shelf until we're both actually in a state in our nervous systems where we can effectively listen to each other and approach this as adults, right? And not just from a triggered, scared place. So both people have to be, you know, willing to work on that, willing to notice when they feel those feelings, that triggered, dysregulated feeling coming up, and to have the awareness to know when you need to step away and, you know, press pause on a conversation and take care of yourself. And then the next step is to relate. And so this is often the step where the goal is to remind each other of the connection and the safety in the relationship before you tackle the issue. So this can look like, you know, laughing together, cuddling together, watching a movie, talking about something light, you know, doing something that's co-regulating for you both, go on a drive together, whatever. It's to rekindle the sense of like, we care about each other, we're in this together, we're on a team. And then once that sense of safety has been reestablished, that's when you can effectively problem solve. That's when the reasoning and the repair happens and you can be like, okay, you know, what can we both do differently? What happened in this scenario that kind of threw us off? How can we learn from this? So those are the kinds of things that I look at for like a safe enough relationship. Those are some of the boundaries that are important to me and that I always kind of suggest to people is boundaries like, you know, I don't want to be in a scenario where one of us gets so triggered that it just, or both of us get so dysregulated that it kind of spirals into like a really emotionally explosive or out of control or super dysfunctional conflict, right? I want both of us to have that goal to notice when those, you know, dysregulated feelings are becoming overwhelming and to take those steps to regulate, relate, and repair. And that takes two people, right? So that's really important. You also are allowed to have any boundaries you want and any needs you want for how you want to be treated, right? So being someone with trauma or being in relationships with people with trauma doesn't mean that you have to forfeit any of the things that are important to you for how you're willing to be treated and what makes you feel safe in relationships. So, you know, as much as we can empathize with where people are coming from, I think a lot of people who consider themselves, like you said, compassionate, empathetic, but also maybe struggle with boundaries, struggle with codependency, struggle with anxious attachment, you know, can tend to really accept a lot of pretty unacceptable and damaging treatment out of this sense of empathy of like, well, I understand where you're coming from and I understand that this is just pain. And so, you know, I'm going to stick it out with you. And I've been there and I get a lot of questions from people like that too. Like a really common thing people ask me is along the lines of, you know, I'm having this conflict with someone and I really don't like how they're making me feel, but how can I tell if they're just being a jerk and they're mistreating me or if they're coming from a place of trauma or avoidant attachment or whatever it is? And what I always say is, you know, it can be both. Like this isn't an either or thing. You can completely understand where someone's coming from and that they probably have a lot of trauma or, you know, attachment wounds that are influencing their behavior and still be like, this is not going to work for me. I don't like how I'm being treated. I don't feel comfortable with how I feel in this relationship. That's completely valid. So having compassion for where people are coming from does not need to negate or cancel out the boundaries that you need to set for your own mental health, right? So these are some of the questions I would ask if you're kind of looking at a relationship and wondering if it's healthy or what you could do to kind of create healthier relationships. You know, is it reciprocal? Is there reciprocal effort being put in to heal, to support each other, and to meet each other's needs? Are you ending up in a situation where you are the caregiver, the provider, really meeting the other person's needs or trying to, and not really having a whole lot of room to ask for your own needs to be met or to set those boundaries. Are you accepting mistreatment that makes you feel unsafe because you're empathizing so strongly with the other person's trauma that you're not really empathizing with your own? You know, these are important things that I think we need to be asking ourselves. I think another big thing that really makes a difference between a safe enough relationship and a not safe enough relationship, a not healthy enough relationship, is just knowing that if someone treats you in a way that does hurt you or does not feel safe or healthy for you, that you have the space to express how you felt and your needs for them to genuinely hear you and for them to, you know, make their best effort to understand, make adjustments, and integrate what you said into future communication. That's one of the main things, right? Because like conflict is going to happen, issues are going to happen. But if you feel safe to express it, and if you trust that they're going to listen, care, and make changes appropriately, that's going to do a lot to help you feel safe in a relationship. You can also set up kind of what we call like fair fighting guidelines, if that's something that you struggle with. So if you're in a relationship where, you know, you both have complex trauma or attachment triggers, and you know, you struggle with conflict being really triggering, or you know, having communication issues that are really dysregulating, one thing that you can do that can help create a sense of safety is to sit down with someone, whether it's your friend or your partner, and to come up with a list of fair fighting rules, which is basically saying like, when we are upset with each other, if that happens, you know, what are the things that we both agree we will not do? And that before it gets to the point where either of us would do those things, we're going to know it's time to step away, take that deep breath, you know, practice those three R's. So for example, I don't want to be yelled at. I don't want the door to be slammed. I don't want to be called names. I don't want threats of breakups or, you know, I'm going to leave you threats. I don't want personal insults. I don't want, you know, really loud voices. Like these are all really common things that I've heard people express, that like, this makes me feel unsafe. Like I need us to be able to discuss things, you know, even if we're upset, without any of that stuff happening. And if either of us feel like we're getting to the point where it's like, I'm so dysregulated that I'm going to yell, or I'm going to slam a door, or I'm going to say something I regret, that's when it's the time to, you know, practice those three R's. And we're both going to respect that, right? Like if either of us says, I need to put a pause on this and step away, there's not going to be like, no, you know, we need to talk about this right now. We're both going to respect that is something to do to demonstrate care for the relationship, is to step away when you don't really feel in control of your communication or your emotions. And if you have a friend or a partner who's not willing to have that conversation with you, right, who's not willing to set up kind of guidelines for what is safe and acceptable for navigating conflict, that might be a red flag, you know. You deserve to set those kind of boundaries and limits. And I think when those guidelines are defined and when they're respected, that also really helps create more feelings of safety in the relationship, because that way you know that even if you disagree or even if something happens, it's not going to get to a point where these really triggering behaviors happen, and you're both committed to doing your part to make sure that the conflict is paused and that you both regulate yourselves before it can get to that point. So that can make it feel a lot safer and easier to talk through things that do come up, or to, you know, work through it when emotions are high. I think another boundary that can be really significant that I have definitely worked on a lot in my life and supported other people in working on is that as someone's friend or partner, yes, we play an integral role in each other's lives towards, you know, healing and attachment work, but it's a relationship that's based on reciprocity. If it's a friendship and romantic relationship, it's not a therapy relationship, and no one person can be completely responsible for someone else's recovery or mental health. So if someone that you love is really struggling, right, whether it's a family member or a friend or a partner, I think it is completely reasonable for you to expect them to be seeking out help, support, and resources outside of just you. It's too much responsibility for one person to carry the weight for another person's well-being and mental health completely. So you also have every right to assert that as you support someone and build a relationship with someone and try to be there for them and provide like a safe, healthy relationship, that you are not willing to be the only support or for them to be relying on you entirely for their mental health support, because that can really lead to like burnout and resentment, and it's just not a healthy dynamic. So if someone close to you is really struggling and you've been doing a lot of emotional labor to support them and to help them process trauma, and you're kind of ending up playing like a therapist role with someone, which this happens a lot, right? It happens a lot, especially in those kinds of maybe boundaryless or loose boundary relationships. It can end up being really dysfunctional for both people. So it's completely reasonable to say something along the lines of, you know, I really feel that you need a therapist, you need to be in therapy, you need, professional mental health care, or you need a team of people supporting you, not just me. Like, I can't be the only one. And I'm happy to continue supporting you as you do these other things to take responsibility for your own healing. But if you're not willing to take these different steps to, you know, get these resources, get the support, and I'm kind of taking on all of that burden, and I'm kind of like your friend / partner / family member / therapist, like, that's too much for me. I can't play all those roles. And, you know, that's a boundary that I've had to set before. I think that a lot of people get to the point where they have to set. And it's not saying I'm not here for you anymore, or I don't love you anymore. It's just saying, like, I cannot carry this by myself. And I also, you know, I'm not your therapist. And for a lot of people, I'm not a therapist at all. I just want to be your friend. And as your friend or as your partner or as your family member, yes, I can support you. Yes, I can love you. But I cannot provide the same level of ongoing intensive mental health support that you really need and deserve to work through this trauma. And the fact that you don't have that support, and that I am kind of the only person that you're working through these things with, you know, I believe that you're not getting the help you need, and it's damaging to our relationship and my mental health. This is something I see all the time. So that's something to ask yourself too. Like, are you an additional support for someone who's also doing the work on themselves to heal? Or do you feel like the responsibility for someone else's mental health and trauma is like squarely on your shoulders? Because that is definitely something that can be really damaging to the relationship and to both people in it. I think the main differentiation that I would recommend people hold on to is the idea that your job in a relationship is not to absorb a bunch of pain and compromise your needs to help someone else heal. And that's not really probably helping them heal either. A relationship is beneficial when both people can help create safety for the other person and learn new reparative patterns together. So, you know, if you have had a lot of experiences where relationships feel codependent, one-sided, exhausting, unhealthy, you know, I would probably recommend focusing on what your attachment needs are and what you need to ask for, what's important to you, instead of maybe just your empathy and what you give. Because especially if you grew up in a scenario where you were kind of used to being the caregiver, or kind of were primed to have those sorts of dynamics with someone, can be really easy to find not just people that have trauma, but people that will form these kind of one-sided caregiving relationships with you instead of reciprocal, you know, relationships built on mutual effort to heal and help each other feel safe and loved. So your needs matter too. Your feelings matter too. And just because you have empathy for someone doesn't mean that you have to tolerate any treatment that makes you feel unsafe or bad or that creates a really unhealthy relationship. That's not going to be healing for anybody. A lot of people have trauma. And being in a relationship with someone who has trauma, whether you have trauma or not, can be a really beautiful, meaningful thing when you can be a support for the healing that someone is already working on and committed to. It can be really amazing, you know. You can help provide someone with the new experiences to learn the healthy patterns they're trying to learn, and they can do the same in return for you, ideally, if they're in that position. But the sad truth is that some people, whether you can love them, you can think they're great people, you can have tons and tons of empathy for where they're coming from, but some people are just not going to be in the place in their own life and their own healing where they're able to provide a healthy friendship, romantic relationship, family relationship with you. You know, they're just not there. And that's okay. It's not a judgment. It's not a devaluing of them as people. But what it can be is just a boundary, which is that, you know, you are not willing to put your own mental health and emotional needs down or you know, minimize or neglect them for the purpose of supporting someone else or maintaining a relationship with someone who's not able to support you back. So, you know, it's painful and it's challenging, but I think one of the ways that that can be approached is by having these conversations early on. If your goal is to have a secure, healthy attachment, that's something that you can talk about, you know, openly with people. And if they have trauma and they're trying to do that too, then hopefully they'll be like, hell yeah, that's what I'm trying to do too. I'm on board. Having talks early on about, like, I tend to have these patterns in relationships. I don't really want to do that anymore. Like, this is what I'd like to be different. That can provide you a lot of information too, because if someone is able to have that conversation with you and hear you out and, you know, talk about it in a direct way, that's probably a good sign that they're going to be someone who is willing to continually have those kinds of conversations and make adjustments and do the work to create a healthy relationship. If you don't feel comfortable or heard when you try to talk about your attachment needs and anxieties, then, you know, maybe that's a sign that this isn't a relationship that's really going to provide space for you to get the support that you need to be healthy. I think I'll just end by saying that boundaries are something that you figure out over time and they can be flexible, you know. So you might not go into every relationship knowing exactly what your needs and boundaries are, but you're going to figure them out as things come up, right? If something really doesn't feel good to you, that can provide information about, like, I think this is a boundary. Like, I really don't want to be talked to that way. I really don't like it when, you know, this kind of communication dynamic plays out. And you also learn more about your attachment needs in a relationship, you know, from what they do that does make you feel cared about, what they do that makes you not feel so cared about. You know, from your experience in the relationship, you're going to gather more information about, like, this is really helpful for me. This is really challenging for me. And that's why I said earlier that the most important thing is not to have, like, a clear set list of, like, these are my boundaries, these are my attachment needs, but rather to just have a relationship that fosters good, direct, open communication and mutual effort. Because as long as you have that foundation, then you're going to be able to navigate these things as they come up, right? That didn't really work for me so well. You know, I really appreciate it when you do these sorts of things. That really helps me feel safe. And for them to be able to do the same. You know, no one goes into a relationship knowing exactly what their needs and boundaries are, and they change, right? They're going to change over time. They're going to change for both people as you heal and grow and the relationship, you know, ebbs and flows. So that's why I think that when you're looking for those safe enough connections, the most important tools you can have are just that open, direct communication, mutual commitment and effort, you know, to continue to grow together, and some kind of tools in your toolbox, like the three R's, regulate, relate, repair, that you can kind of use when things get choppy. Those are going to be kind of those foundational skills that allow you to navigate relationships from a healthier lens, try to work on some of those patterns, and try to create those, like, mutual secure attachments over time. I hope that helps. I'm really excited. I have some great interviews with guests and guest therapists coming up. Really excited to be making podcast episodes again. If you're interested in getting the extra episode every month, I promise I'm going to be on top of it. I know I have been, like, off the map for a few months because of my move and everything, but I'm going to be making sure that I have an extra bonus episode up on Patreon every single month for the people that are supporting me on there. And at least one episode for the public every month, and maybe some extra bonus episodes will be snuck in there too. So really excited to be back. If you have questions or you have topics that you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, please feel free to message me. You can either send me a message on my Instagram, it's in my link tree, or you can always email me at complextraumarecoverypod@gmail.com with any questions or suggestions for topics for the show. Thank you guys so much for listening. And yeah, I'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks.